or even in Kiss for Actors, we find that it's muscle, that it's not really exactly to be taken literally.
He says, for instance,
he says, Shinea Riel Moav. The Gemara says, Shehu Kule Moshel. That pasuk, I believe, is in the end of Shmuel Beis, where it tells you about. It says that this man went down and he killed a lion in a pit, barehanded. Moshel! The Gemara says, only Moshel. When David HaMelech said, who will give me water from Bar Beis Lechem? The Gemara says, he didn't really want to do water. I mean, it's ridiculous. He wanted to actually go and drink water from that bar. I mean, it's ridiculous. What does he care about that? So the Gemara says, he meant something else. He was talking about the Torah. The Gemara says what he meant over there. It's a Moshel. The Gemara says the whole book of Job, the whole book of Eve is a mashal. The Klal Amr Ketas and mashal haya. Many Chachamim say it was only a mashal. Eve l'ayav l'nivra. Eve l'ayav l'nivra. Never exists, only a mashal. The Lo Pirish lays a davar who sims a mashal. They don't even explain what the purpose. Chazal don't say why, what the mashal was. They just tell you it's a mashal. V'chein may say Yecheskel, by Yecheskel Anavi, when the people in the bones, the Atzamas Yeveshas, rose. Chazal say it was a mashal. Never happened. Many Chazal say it was just a mashal. Didn't really happen. Omer k'sashen mashal haya. The Rabban Kehle, many like this. So you see that to Chazal, the idea that something which is written openly in Pesukim, the whole event of the Atzmas, Atzmas Yeveshas, the whole event of Yecheskel, Chazal understood that it is a mashal. And even the ones that argued said it was a mashal, but it wasn't strange to them, the idea that Pesukim should be written in the way of a mashal, right? He says, "The imata ma'ayin me'achas hashtei kitas arishon." Oh, one second. So Rabban Kehle. So therefore, the Rambam says, "Why should it be that psukim in the Torah we could understand as a mashal?" And we see that the Chachamim from the time of the Nevi'im all the way back always wrote mashalim. Why should it be when you come to the Gemara? Why can't you assume the same premise? Why should we stop? We see when Chazal say things that don't make any sense, and we know that a wise person will always clothe his high ideas in these mashalim. That was the method that they used all the way back. So why is it over here people suddenly say, no, we must accept it word for word? Isn't it inconsistent and nonsensical? That's the Rambam's argument. But for some crazy reason, this became a pivotal point in the Emunah. And people felt that you have to believe every word. It's completely absurd. Chacham never meant it. On the contrary, the reason why the Chum give these weird mashalim is in order to show you. They felt it would be obvious to every person that nobody's going to take it literally, that there's something hidden here. What is the purpose of a mashal? Why do Chum give these wild mashalim? For one reason. Because when a person sees it, he knows that they can't mean it literally. There's something deep here. It's a signal. There's something deep which they don't want everybody to understand, or they don't feel everybody can understand. And they put it in a mashal in a way that an intelligent person will be able to pull out the main ideas. And a non-intelligent person won't. If you, look how well the Rambam knows this. It's unbelievable. Now, the Rambam, the human psychology, is amazing. While reading this book, often one of the first two groups. You all listen to what I'm saying. And not with one word will you be impressed from this whole inyan that I just mentioned. Because it won't be pleasant to you, right? Shum davar mimeno. Aval yazikha, on the contrary, it will disturb you. The kisna'eyu, and you will hate it. The heyech yeusu ha-macholim ha-kalim ha-ma'atim ikamusam ha-yishtarim be'echusam la'odam ha-shahirgul ma'acholim ha-royim. Person that's used to eating bird food, to him, food that's unhealthy, to him, he follows his palate. And that tastes good to him. When you give him something that's healthy, can't stand it. Not used to it. Vusoni yosam. They disturb him, they're distasteful to him, and he hates them. Halo yadata mashma omro ha'anoshim, show you regilum lecho betzolim v'shumim v'adogim, v'nafshinu kotzo balechem haklokel. He says, when they said that the mon was really the best food, the healthiest food, and they said that they wanted the shumim and the betzolim and the dogim. They couldn't stand the good food. Why? Because they were used to just, right, they were used to it. So that's why if you're used to bad ideas, the true idea is hit you like a bolt of lightning and they're painful, distasteful. They are vicious. But if you are from the third group, kishatira dovar midivrayim, when you see any word, anything from the words of Chazal, shadas machik aso, that your intelligence tells you, pushes it, tells you that it's far away, in other words, it doesn't make any sense. Tamo with this boning bow. You'll stop and you'll analyze, look into it. Vidashi huchidah, umashal. and you know that it's only a mushel. V'tishkav oshel kalev, v'tivud harayim, and you go to sleep with your heart, your soul involved, oppressed, and your mind bothered, v'chiburo u'besvaraso, in understanding the way it was put together and the ideas behind it. The tachshov limtzor kavonas hasechel, and you'll try to find the intention of the idea, of the understanding. The emunas hayosha, and the true understanding. Kemoshinema limtzor divrei chepetz, v'kos of yosher divrei emes. Roz tistakel b'sifri zeh. Then when you're on that level, you'll take a look at the sefer, the yoloch bezus Hashem. Then the sefer will help you. If you don't have that first level, then it won't help you. That works.
So you can tell us what it is?
The ideas are corrupt. But then he said they were supported by by Chazal. Now he's going to show you why they think Chazal support what they're saying. Because the giant dog. Right?
Okay.
Everyone knows how big he was. Alright? So it works like this. Evan Shabikesh Og Melech HaBashem Lizrak Al Yisrael. The stone that Og Melech HaBashem wanted to throw on the Jews. Gemara Gemirala. The Gemara explains exactly how it happened, how it was. Omar, he said like this. Machane Yisrael Kamahavi. Og Melech HaBashem, the giant said like this. He said, how big is Machane Yisrael? Plus a posse, 3 miles. Ezel the Akir Tura. I'll go and I'll pull out a rock. That's 3 miles plus a parsi, that's 3 miles big. The ish the olayo, and I'll throw it on them, hit the window, I'll kill all the Jews. What? That's over. He went and he pulled out a rock. He looked at a mountain, towards a mountain. He went and he uprooted a mountain. By plus a parsi, that was 3 miles long. Big mountain. The icy al ratio. And he carried it on his head.
Which way?
Yes. And he made a hole in the mountain, right. The nachis bitzavore, and it fell down around his neck. He wanted to throw it off. He wanted to throw it off his shoulders. Mashchishine lahai giso lahai giso. So his teeth grew out to one side and to the other side. The lemotzi lemishlefon, he couldn't remove it, couldn't pull it off. Behind the tzir, and that's what the pasuk means when it says, Shine Roshoyim Shibarta. The Omar of Shimon Ben Lakish. The Omar of Shimon Ben Lakish. My Dechsiv Shine Roshoyim Shibarta. When it says you broke the teeth of the Rasha, I'll Tikri Shibarta. Don't say Shibarta, you broke it. Elo Sheri Bavta, that you made greater. How tall was Moshe? Eser Amos. 10 Amos. Everyone knows. Sorry, I broke this more. Everyone knows. Right? Next, whatever it was. That was also 10 amos. Bar Eser Amin, it was also 10. That's 15 and 50, it's about 30 feet already. Shavar Eser Amma, he jumped 15 feet. That's 15, 45 feet up. Umachi Bekasule, and he hit him on his heel. The Kapla, and he killed him. That the Rambam would refer to. See, now some people might say that we are obligated to accept this verbatim. Word for word. And literally it means, what Chazal literally means, is that there was such a man, Og, a big giant, who was so tremendous that he could lift up a mountain, uproot a mountain that was 3 miles long. And this is his plan, right? And simply to throw it on the Jews. But then a few ants came, must have come right fast. A lot of ants go fast.
Look,
and big ants, right? giant ants. But on the Jews, those ants, fortunately, were chomping away, and they chomped a hole right through the thing, and the man just in time, mountain, moved down on the shoulders.
That's what makes sense.
Then, as he was about to remove it, to throw it off, his teeth grew in two sides, and the mountain was split, was down on his shoulders, so each tooth went into one side of the mountain. So, standing there, little Moshe, 15 feet tall, took an axe 15 feet tall, and jumped 15 feet, a sum total of 45 feet, hit him right on the ankle and bang up. Right?
Exactly how to express it twice.
Does a Chachamim say something that appears to be way out, far out? You should know there's a reason why they say it in that form. Because they're telling you something. They're telling you this is all a mushel. What you have to try to find is the deeper underlying meaning. And once you see that, then you'll see the brilliance of their words. Okay? Another throw it upon the Jews. Right? But then, tremendous plan to destroy the Tzaddik. The greatest, most powerful plan. But one unforeseen little event comes along and smashes his plan. You see? That's the idea. I used to love to tell over a story with about a physicist named Lisa Meitner, who was about, just had occurred to her, how to create an atom bomb. How to split the atom and utilize the energy from an atom bomb. So when she thought of it, she was working in the laboratory, and they came knocking on the door. And they told her that she must escape Germany, otherwise she will be destroyed. Had they come a few hours later, Germany would have had the atom bomb. So Einstein's love to tell over the story, because the story... Little event. And the whole plan falls apart. That's what that's all saying. Why? What is that little... What are the ants, really? What are the ants? This little event that takes place, the unforeseen occurrence that the Russia fails to see, is tremendous power. It can destroy, he thinks it can destroy, conquer the world. But that one little unforeseen thing, that's Hashgacha. Right. The quiet little action that the Russian never feels, big mountain, what can go wrong? But if he gets one thing, there's ants in the mountain, and the ants are eating away. He doesn't realize it, and all of a sudden it splits and falls on him. You see?
But also the speed growth.
Now, when the Russia's...
Yeah, the backup. Right.
It doesn't just fail, but notice how Chazal say it falls on his shoulders.
He's caught in it.
He's caught in it. You see? He's caught in it.
No way out.
What does he want to do? He wants to get out. You see? But what makes him stay? Amazing. What makes him stay? What did Chazal say? What grew big? The teeth. What do the teeth represent? The teeth. Shine Rishayim Shibata. You broke the teeth of the Russian. What do the teeth represent? The teeth represent the instrument that you bite with. The part that the person wants to do damage. That's what I mean. Shine Rishayim Shibata. You took their teeth, that means they can't be harmless. When a person teeth, that means he's vicious. Right? So what does it mean? What keeps them in their plan until they're destroyed? The viciousness. Give me an example. When Hitler, Yimach Shemoy, when he started to lose the war, 42, 43, it started to change, he should have pulled out. Should have sought. Save, at least save yourself. Right? Was he able to pull out? No. What did he have to do? He had to go down into the ground. All the way. Scorched earth policy. Destroy the entire nation and himself. Why couldn't he pull out? The mountain broke. It crumbled already. He had his mistake. The ants were there already. The ants ate him away. Where were the ants? Russia. Calculation with the winter in Stalingrad. So once the mountain broke and fell on him, instead of having intelligence of pulling away, he couldn't. Why? Because the teeth grew. It means instead of retreating, his teeth got bigger, the viciousness got greater, and he stayed further, get more involved, deeper, keep going, don't pull out, keep going until what? Until how was he destroyed though? 1 second, please, arrest him. Okay? The height? No, the Tainik Zoo, we do not have in any way this enjoyment. The true enjoyment of the spiritual. Zulasi Kaineg Haguk Tuvad. We only have in this world the enjoyment of the physical. Vasoga Sahushin. And the perception of the senses. Minamacho van Mishke. From eating, from drinking, and drinking. Van Mishgo. And sexuality. Vachol Mashe Zuloso Ela. And anything besides these physical enjoyments, who ekwenu b'lim motzi, it is not found to us. We do not know what it is. Ve'ein anu makirin ourselves, and we cannot recognize it. Ve'lo nasigoso b'tchilas ha-machshavah, and we cannot possibly comprehend it mentally. Ela achar chakira gedola, only after great mental
It's a great mental investigation. Every type of enjoyment is simply physical. And the only way we can perceive spiritual enjoyment is not through our senses, but only through our intellect. It would be as if, in other words, what the Rambam is saying, it would be as if a person had no sight and you would try to explain to him logically how sight works. See? I would explain it, you tell him, well, there is a faculty with which, without touching anything, you could tell what a thing is. And you'd be able to tell him and say, well, just like when you feel something that has a shape, this shape can be known to the person without touching it. Can you imagine what how the person would not be able to really feel assured that he understands what you're talking about? The only thing is he'd have some idea, because you'd be conveying it totally on an intellectual level. And you'd be conveying a perception on an intellectual level. Interesting phenomenon, yes?
Yes, because there are two things that they have
what spiritual enjoyment is, we have no way of knowing. Because the only thing that we know in this world, the only enjoyments that we have in this world, are sense enjoyments, sensual enjoyments. Right? Enjoyments which come to us through the fact that we have these faculties of the senses. Right? However, an enjoyment such as Olam Haba, which is a different type of enjoyment, its character is totally different, we can in no way perceive. There's no way to perceive it. The only thing that we can know about it is, intellectually, we can begin to understand something about it. To give a muscle, the muscle that I just gave you. That if a person is blind and you try to explain to him what sight is, if you really think into it, you'll see that he would have some idea of what it is, right? You can tell him all the facts about sight, how it works. You tell him exactly how sight works, when it works, you see, what it needs to work, or everything about sight, what it does and how it works. However, he will only perceive it in a mental way, but he will not really sense it, because he doesn't have that sense. He says, similarly, with Olam Haba, no person can really, truly apprehend what it is, because he does not have this faculty. Because he does not have the faculty. Okay? That's all the Rambam said until now. Alright? Let's see what he said further.
Doesn't pleasure imply a sensual...
Not sensual.
And
yet we call it pleasure. That's an odd thing. Why is it odd to us? Because we do not know logically that pleasure must be sensual. The only thing is that every pleasure we have is sensual. Correct?
Yeah.
Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Every pleasure that we have is sensual. But we do not know that there is that this is the only time. Do you understand what I mean? Right. Let me give you another example. I mentioned this in logic. I said, why is it that a person feels, when you talk about God, you can prove God logically, and a person can be convinced that there is a God, many thinkers were, but nevertheless, when you ask him, do you feel in relationship to God the same sense of security as you do in relationship to the existence of the table? He will say no. As much as the person can see God, He can't feel the same conviction about God. Why is that so? And that's why people in their minds always, when they think about God, it's like it's one of those areas that, you know, it's like vague, you know? And there is a God, you don't know what it is. Why? The answer is very simple. Because man perceives things on the basis of what his senses have told him. Give an example. Let's say, for instance, the world. In this world that we exist in, we have like this. We have several categories. You have a rock, which does not have any life. Right? Then you have plants, which have life but don't have any motion. Don't hold it to biology. I'm just going to give you the examples. Right? Then you have things which are self-propelled, like animal life. Correct? So when you see something, a person immediately thinks, what is this? Is this a plant? Is this animate, inanimate? Right? Okay. Now, let us say, for instance, in this world, everything that has a body. Now, body is the genus, because everything has body. Everything has a physical material body. But some of them have life, some of them don't have life. Right? So I have two concepts in my mind. I have a concept of body without life, like a table, and I have a concept of body with life, like a dog or a man. Correct? Let us say the only thing in the world that there was would have been animals. Everything would be animate. And then you would tell a person, say, you know, there could be something. You tell a person, what about, could you perceive having a body without life? You see? So logically, the person should be able to say, yes, why not? Just take the body that you have that has life and abstract the quality of life, and you have an inanimate object, right? But nevertheless, the mind has never seen the breakdown, because in the world of reality, it has never been broken down that way. So we can perceive it, because in the world of reality, we have this breakdown. We have inanimate, then we have animate. So the mind sees two separate categories. Now when you see an animal, you see body plus life. When you see a rock, you see body without life. You can perceive both because you have examples, concrete examples of both. But let us say you only had animal. Let's say everything you had was only animal. And we would start to discuss the inanimate. It would be very... What? Yeah, I know, but let's say you didn't have that. Let's say you didn't have it. Let's say you only had things that had motion and that had life. So then you'd find difficulty in understanding a rock. Because you've never seen the categorical breakdown. Now, when a scientist operates, he has to operate only on the basis of the breakdowns that he has seen, you see, in his lifetime. And when he analyzes and breaks things down into categories, he breaks them down to the base of what he's seen. He can't break down the base of something he hasn't seen, because the human mind is limited to what it has seen. So that's the difference. What?
Does
it? Certainly.
Doesn't anything that exists have a physical form?
Well, insofar as we see, right?
Right.
Well, not necessarily. That doesn't necessarily have to be true.
Yeah, but
insofar as... Okay, let me finish first, and then I'll take all the questions. I've seen a lot of questions, so we'll finish on that. All right? Therefore, science, that's the difference between physics and metaphysics. See, physics means analysis of nature based upon the breakdown that you have in front of you. That's what a scientist does. He breaks down things according to the given material that has been presented to him. Metaphysics, that's what's called after physics, meta means after, is a breakdown regardless of whether you have seen these objects before you or not. It's a theoretical breakdown. Now let me give you an example. Everything that we see exists always has body by the senses. Isn't that true? Because like he mentioned before, is there anything that we know that exists that doesn't have a form to it? No, right? Right? They get into problems when you go into the atom with the photons and what type of forms, the waves, the particles. Because, why is it so difficult to understand? Because we don't see the breakdown. We haven't seen this breakdown. You see? When it comes to God, we have existence without form. That's why it's difficult for us to perceive it. That's why when man tries to think about God, he finds that he gets dizzy. Why does he get dizzy? Because he's never seen the breakdown. And since he has never seen the breakdown, and can never see the breakdown, why can't he see the breakdown? Because simply, what's the definition of God? Be non-material, right? God's essence is non-material, and he has never seen a non-material thing, because all he sees is with the senses. That's why the most difficult concept for man to apprehend is God. That's why the Torah, what does the Torah say? The most basic thesis in the Torah is what? What is the most basic thesis in the Torah? One that the Chazal say, and Nomi Chazal, you look at the Chumash, the Kol HaTorah Kula is directed towards this one goal. What is the goal? If there's anything in the Torah that is the most basic, fundamental idea of our religion, it's Avodah Zarah is physical representation of God. It is an attempt, to combine perception of God with sensual perception. And this, Yadus, was the only religion, and today remains unique, because even the other religions that claim they believe it, still they have different forms in front of them in order to utilize. Yadus says, not simply Avodah Zarah means not to believe in a strange God. Avodah Zarah means even if you should take a physical object to represent our God, it's prohibited. Lo sasun, if this says, lo sasun iti Elohei Chesef Elohei Zahav. Lo sasun iti, don't make of me Elohei Chesef Elohei Zahav. What was the ego? What was the crime of the sin of the ego? The sin of the ego was nothing more than an attempt to perceive God in a physical way. Because they took the calf, they didn't say that there's no God. But this Ela lo hecha Yisrael asher tzichem Eretz Yisrael, which means that they weren't stupid. They said Moshe Rabbeinu was gone. Moshe went up to get the luchos. What was the luchos? A physical representation of the mitzvos. Now we say Moshe isn't here. And since Moshe is gone, we have to have something physical in order to be constantly aware of God. So what do they do? So they built something physical in order to remind them of God. That's why when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain, what did he do? And he saw what happened? So he took the luchos and broke them to pieces. Why? How can you do that? The answer is why? Exactly, because he said, what was the purpose of luchos? The purpose of luchos were to have people recognize mitzvahs, and through mitzvahs recognize God. But they made no mistake. What they wanted to do was to have a physical, to perceive God through a physical way. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, if that's what the luchos stand for them, then they must be destroyed. Mm-hmm. And Chazal say that when Moshe Rabbeinu broke them, so God said, Ashrecha Sheshibarta. Ashrecha Sheshibarta. Why does it say Ashrecha Sheshibarta? Because Moshe Rabbeinu, with his intellect, said, these people aren't ready for luchos. On the contrary, luchos is their destruction. But you see, Moshe Rabbeinu made his decision totally on the basis of rationality. Why? Could you imagine, let's say a person take a Sefer Torah and throw it on the floor. That's a terrible thing, right? Sefer Torah. Luchos certainly had no condition of Sefer Torah. Luchos is, it's Ezbel Akim, my Sefer Kimi. Because the Gemara said that the whole way it was written was Ben Esai on them. The way it was constructed, the mem was in a circle and it stood in the middle. So apparently it was constructed in a certain way. The different forces holding the mem in place. You now maybe understand a little better with magnetism and everything, how it worked. But this was done, this was created by God. So what could have more condition than that? Moshe Rabbeinu threw it in the ground, broke it to pieces. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the only purpose of the Kedusha of Luchos is because it brings the Jews to a higher recognition of God. But if it's misinterpreted, so then it must be destroyed, on the contrary. And that's why God said, Ashrecha Sheshibarta, because he made a rational decision. An emotional person would say, how could I break the Holy Luchos? It's not impossible. But God only acts in a certain way. After God does his action, then man is on his own. I'll give you an example. One example, Rabbi Meir mentioned this example, it's correct. It says by the snake, when I cut his bone, God made the snake. So it says, Moshe saw the snake, Vayonas Moshe miponav, he ran away. Why did Moshe run away? He's standing in front of God. Was the snake going to bite him? Why? If he was standing in front of God, are you sure? Nothing's going to happen to me. What's the answer? The answer is the act of God creating the snake. That's nace. But Moshe, now he's on his own. Now he has to operate under the laws of nature. And once the snake is there, he has to protect himself against that snake just like he protects himself against any wild beast. You see? Because God's action is limited to his specific action. The rest, man has to operate on his own. God doesn't want man to just be a puppet of his actions. Man has his own decisions, and he always has to live by his own decision. Except for the case where there's intervention, but only in the intervention itself. After the intervention of God, he's on his own again. And Moshe Rabbeinu knew that if he would stand there in front of the snake, that would be committing suicide. You see? Okay, both of us are going to get too fucking certain. Alright. So God is in Yahadus, and this is Kol HaTorah Kula, anti-Avodah Zarah, which means that man must realize that his perception of God can in no way come through his senses. You see? And that's why Avodah Zarah is out of that rule. Okay? Why is it difficult for man to understand God, and why does a person feel this when he thinks about God? Precisely because since man's nature is physical, and everything he perceives is physical, he only feels the emotional security, the emotional conviction when he deals with these physical things. But once he goes into the non-physical, he loses that conviction. Because his nature is that everything comes to him through the senses. But a person who is abstract, and this is what God demands of us, to be abstract, even the most simple Jew is obligated to be abstract when it comes to what is art. That abstraction you must have, you see? When it comes to the abstract, he feels insecure. But he must simultaneously realize that this feeling is not because reality is any less real, but it's only because his nature, he was created this way. Man has the ability to reflect on his nature and to see that the reason why he doesn't feel the security is because his nature is sensuous, but not because these things are any less real. You follow what I'm saying? Am I getting the idea across?
They said that was like a detriment to religion.
Well, The thing is this, the reason why they built the Mishkan is correct. And the same reason as the Luchos. And that's the mistake of Diego. But the point is, when it's in its proper framework, then it's a benefit to man. Why? Because a person is emotional, and the average person, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't need a Mishkan. A person who is an idol, the Rambam doesn't need a Mishkan. The Rambam's the same Rambam, with a Mishkan, without a Mishkan. Because he lives in a totally new world of ideas. But the average individual isn't on that level. And he needs something emotional to boost him and to drive him towards the truth. But it mustn't distort the truth. You see, if it distorts the truth, then it loses its goal. It must only be a means to reach the truth. So the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, when a person came to the Beis HaMikdash, he was impressed. Because the average person is impressed. He sees a gigantic structure. He sees Kohanim. That's why the law is that a Kohen is a Baal Mom, that's a Kohen who lost his hand, or he's a cripple. They can't serve the Mikdash. Why? God looks at him any less because he's missing an arm or a limb. I mean, the Torah doesn't recognize the greatest Gedolim. Many of them were sick, and some of them were deformed, and he was blind. Why can't he be a Kohen? Why can't he serve in the Avodah? He can be the greatest person. What's the answer? The answer is because, of course, God doesn't look at him any less. On the contrary, sometimes Yitzchak, it says about Yitzchak that when he was blind, he reached the highest level because it's completely away from physical. But the average person, when he sees a cripple, it turns him off. You see, he can't help it. He's an emotional being. Of course, Moshe Rabbeinu, this would have no effect on him. But the average person, physical things mean something to him. This is a good-looking person, he's impressed. This is a person that's deformed, he's turned off. He doesn't want to be that way. He identifies with him, it's disgusting to him. So, since people are on that level, the average person's on that level, the purpose of the Mikdash was for the average person to be able to relate to God, to give him a boost to relate to God. Same. That's the idea of going to shul, see, many things like that.
Setting up
the whole Machlis Yisrael, the idea that we take care of them.
Of course. Absolutely, no question about it. That was said to the Melech too. But the Melech was also there. All these things are dangerous. Why are they dangerous?
Because you take that as a point of
learning. Exactly right. Because the thing, when you need a means, so if you use it properly, so it's used as a means. But the danger is it's used as an end many times. That's why the Gemara says that God destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Why did he destroy the Beis HaMikdash? So the Gemara says that God shafach hamasa la'itzim v'la'adam. That God let his wrath out on the sticks and stones, the physical structure of the Beis HaMikdash, rather than on the Jews. What does it mean? God gets angry and he lets his wrath out here instead of here. The person gets angry, he's angry at his wife, so he breaks the dish. And this is ridiculous. The answer is, the best thing was the destruction of the Mikdash. Because the Mikdash at that time was corrupt. And it became an instrument of corruption rather than an instrument of correction. So what did God have to do? He had to destroy the Mikdash. That's why we say, and when we mourn, many Mepharshim say, why do we mourn in Tishbev every year? Tishbev, because we don't deserve the Mikdash. Otherwise, we'd have the Mikdash today. It means it's a flaw in our character. We aren't on the level. If we had the Mikdash today, it could be detrimental to us. The same thing is with Eretz Yisrael. Why does the Torah say constantly, if you listen to the Chukim, you'll remain in Eretz Yisrael, and if you don't, they'll chase you out of Eretz Yisrael. Why? And the Torah gives a whole story, how it happens, the whole development. It says, first you'll feel power, and you'll say, it's me, and you'll say that Kochi wrote some Yadi. Why? Because nationalism is a dangerous thing. Yeah, this is not Israel is nationalism. Well, they're saying that we're just the emotion of nationalism that every single country has is to prove that we're great. On the contrary, the purpose of Eretz Yisrael is the place in which the ideal system could be implemented.
Why do we have it now?
One second, let's talk about the ideal first. The purpose for Eretz Yisrael is that we should be in the ideal state in terms of performance of mitzvahs and living the ideal life. But when it becomes a means for personal glorification, so then it's to your own detriment. So then God chases the Jews out of Eretz Yisrael. And Eretz Yisrael is something which on the contrary, which harms them, just like Shiras HaLuchos, exact same thing. This idea runs straight through the Torah. Mm-hmm. Basic idea. So, what do you want to say?
No, I'm just thinking, I wish you were facing some
nation. That was capable, the only nation was capable of living the ideal life. And God likes the ideal life. That's not prejudice, because we say that it's the ideal life that God likes. But if you say it's a personal failure, God happens to like us better than others. This is nonsense. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu told the Jews in the list right before he died. He said, He says, not because you're the most, you're the nicest. Why? Because the purpose was in order to implement the system of Yadus. And if that's not the purpose, then Eretz Yisrael is wasted. Not only is it wasted, it's detrimental. And God has to drive the Jews out of Eretz Yisrael. That's the basic idea. It's the Six-Day War. That's the thing that's bad. Yes?
Another quick question, sir.
Correct, let yes, give me a second. I'm not going to go for an answer. The question is,
he says, and it is fitting that it should be this way, that man can't perceive the enjoyment of the spiritual. Why? Because we are in the physical world. We can only perceive the enjoyments, the low enjoyments of the physical, which are not lasting, which cease, which stop, periodically. But the true enjoyments, the spiritual enjoyments, came to Midin. They are eternal. Omdin la'ad, everlasting, einam nifsakim. Ve'ein bein ehem, u'bein elu ha'tanugim yachas, lo kurva v'shumpanam. There is no relationship between the two types of enjoyments. They're qualitatively differentiated. Just like the sense of sight is something different than the sense of touch, so is the sense of enjoyment that a person perceives spiritually totally different than any type of enjoyment that a person can have in this physical world. Interesting piece of it. He says, "Ve'ein roi etzlenu ba'alei haTorah." He says, and it is not fitting for us who abide by the Torah, who accept the Torah, the lo etelo Elohim min haphilosufim, nor is it fitting for a metaphysician of the philosophers. It's not fitting for people who ascribe to the laws of Moses, like us, or people who are metaphysicians, who are abstract philosophers. Shenoma, that we should say, Shehamalochim vakochovim vayogolim ein lohem tainu. That we should say that the intelligences, the abstract intelligences, because a malach means an intelligence, which means something that is non-physical and has existence. We should not say that they do not have any enjoyment. It means, in simple terms, the non-physical existences, like malachim, without the stars, and our Buddha. Avo be'emes yesh lohem tainu gavol. But the truth is that they do have a great enjoyment. B'mashahin yodim u'masigin be'emitas habori yisbara. Because they have knowledge and they understand the truth concerning God. U'bozehin be'tainu t'midi. And with this, they are in a constant state of enjoyment. She'eino nifsa. That never ceases. The ain tainu gufoni etzlam, and they do not have any physical pleasures. The ain amasigin asa, and they can't comprehend it. They don't know what it is because they are totally the opposite of us. Lefi she'ein lahem chushin, because they don't have any senses, kamona like we do. She asigu lahem, with which they can perceive. Ma she'ano masigin, we perceive. Ukimo kein anachnu, kishe yizdakech mimenu. And so too for us, after death, when the physical body leaves us and a person rises into a different type of existence, a spiritual existence, what? Yizdakech means to become refined. Zach means becomes refined. Eino masig hatanugim agufniyim. He cannot perceive the physical enjoyments. Eino wrote to them, and he doesn't want them. Because the only reason man wants them is because the sensual desire is within him. But he doesn't want them because they really are the best. You see? Ela ke'ein sheyirtza hamelach shehu godol hamemshala sheyispashet mimalkuso umemshalto v'yachzol asachik in hamorim bekador kishehoya osa lefnim in hamalkus v'zeh bekatnur shino shavid be kapnus shono kishlo ya mafkin be mailas shnei hayonim kemo she anachnu hayom shapkhnu min amnasim tanuge haguf ve lo tanuge hanefesh. Yes, what does he mean? He says like this. He says just like the melach kein she yitzanach shu gadol lamemshala she is pashim alchusim alshalto He says, just like a king who has, let me see this translation, I'm sure you have the other way. He perceives the idea of greatness and of expanding his powers, you see. He would not wish to go back to the state of when he was a young child and he played ball, you see, and had those enjoyments. So right now, to him, this is nothing. right? So too, us, who praise the physical, when we reach the higher level, we look at this as nonsensical. So in the same manner, it's a muscle. Just like it's a muscle from the physical world. You see, you want to show you that you have the physical world also. A person, like you have to take a diplomat, he's living in a different world now. Is all the enjoyments that happened as a youth, many of those enjoyments, just gone. He looks familiar with disdain, right? And he considers himself on a higher level. Whether he is or not, I'm not arguing philosophically. But this is what he considers himself, you see, on a higher level. It's true. The truth of the matter is it's another physical enjoyment. But anyways, the fact remains that he considers this a higher one, and he's completely out of that realm and doesn't care for it. So to us, we praise the physical enjoyments now, when we reach a higher level, we look at this as nonsensical. We look at this type of enjoyment as nonsensical. וכשתזבונים בעניין שני אלה התנויים, תמסו פחיסוס האחס ומיילס השנייה, ואפילו בעולם הזה. This is when you analyze these two enjoyments, you'll discover the defect of one and the advantage of the other, even in this world. וזה, and this is like, this is the muscle gives. כי אתה מוצא רוב בני האדם, כולם מייגים נפשסיהם וגופסיהם בעומר ויגיע שאין למעלה מהם. People spend their lives exerting energy tirelessly, working day and night with an exertion of energy that is very high. You can't do any more. כדי שיגע לו מעלה וכבוד, in order you should get some honor. People spend their lives, I mean, the desire for money, basically. I mean, the Plato said a long time ago, it's true, a person doesn't want money for money's sake. Money is a means to something. Not money for its own sake. Well, money is a means to something. What is the means? The means is power, prestige, honor, one of these things. He says, "Ukishayinasu b'nei Adam, ukishayinasu b'nei Adam." That people should praise him. This is what he wants. Vanozu eina hanos meichel u'mishter. Yet this enjoyment is not a really physical enjoyment. It's a psychological enjoyment. וכמו כן, הרבה מבני אדם, בוחר לנקה מאובב, יוסר מהשיג הרבה מתנוי אלוף. Many people would rather spend their time destroying their enemies, taking revenge, than they would to sit down to indulge in food and drink. I mean, politicians, different things, you know, ready to destroy this one, tapes, and things. So government, how they take revenge from different people. This is their whole life. Their whole life involved in this type of thing. Even and essentially, why don't they sit down and say, okay, now we're just going to spend our lives just enjoying the Tanuge Machal Mishta? No, this they look down upon. They frown upon this, and they seek a higher type of enjoyment. And they spend their lives in a higher, what they consider to be a higher type of enjoyment. Yeah. Yosef mehasik hav matanei agok v'habem ibnei other misrachakim. Misrachakin min hagodul shebetanugi agot. Many people keep away from the physical pleasures. Miu also sheyasigu mizechapo busha, because they're afraid that they're going to receive shame and disgrace. Why do people keep away from the physical pleasures? People are not committed to yadus, but still they keep away. Why? Because they're afraid. And yeah, they're going to get exposed. With no other malo fishim vakei shehelo shame tov. They want to have a good name. The imin yono came to olam hazar gufani, and if this is so in the physical world, he says kosh came to olam hagufani, ru olam habo. He says certainly in the spiritual world that a person can look down upon the physical enjoyments, because we see even in this world that people frown upon certain physical enjoyments, and they forego them for a higher type of enjoyment. The philosopher one time said that most of the evil that was done in this world is not because of taiva. But why? Because of psychological enjoyments. I mean, the real power mongers that caused all the troubles to the world weren't after physical enjoyments. They were just after eating and drinking. They wouldn't cause much trouble. Just eating and drinking. That's it. They're after emotional, psychological enjoyments. Yeah, on the contrary. Hitler in time of the war would eat, especially when he ate very little, and he showed that he doesn't care for the physical. This was on the contrary. This was supposed to be his model. He cared for the physical. What did he care for? He cared for the psychological enjoyment. So you see that even in this world, people will frown upon the physical. Certainly when a person sees the true enjoyment, how much more will he simply look down at all these other enjoyments and consider them nonsensical and worthless?
Well, we don't know what it is.
We don't know any way what it is. Just giving up. Right. Now he's going to what it is. Now he's worthless. He says, this is Olam Haba. Olam Haba is the ultimate. The ultimate existence. Because our souls understand God. He says, just like the intelligences, which have no physical form, the malachim understand God, or perhaps man can even understand more, even better. He says, and this enjoyment cannot be broken down, cannot be analyzed, broken down, say, like different enjoyments, they have their limits, they have different rules about them, when they operate, how they operate, and they can be analyzed. This is completely qualitatively differentiated from many other enjoyments. Now, it's like this. When the Navi comprehended the greatness of Olam Haba, what did he say? How much is the good that you have hidden to those that fear you? Which means that he couldn't express what it was. He just said how great it is, but he couldn't express what it was because there's no example that he can give in the physical world. V'chein amru aleihem ha-shalom, and so Chazal said, Olam Haba, where is Olam Haba? Ein bo lo achila v'lo shia, v'lo rechitza v'lo sicha. There's no eating, there's no drinking, there's no washing, no anointing, no tashmish, no sexuality. Tzadikim yoshvim v'atrosayim v'rashayim, v'nenim yitiv ha-shchina. What is the description? The description of Olam Haba. Tzadikim dwell, atrosayim v'rashayim, the crown is on their head, and they enjoy the light of the Shina. What does it mean? Chazal, it's Medrash. First of all, in the negative, there is no achilas siya or sikha tashmish. There are no physical enjoyments. Then they give the positive description, and the Rambam will explain what the positive description is. The first description, atrosayim b'rashayim, hasha'oras ha-nefesh, the eternal existence of the soul, the remaining of the soul, I should say, ikiyum ha-muskalahem, with the existence of the knowledge that they have. V'hu ha-borei is Borah. And that is God, the knowledge of God. Why God? Why God? Why, I want to understand, why is it the knowledge of God always? Why God? Why God? You understand why it has to be God? It has to be God. What? But why is the ultimate knowledge of God? Why? But why is it that we say that all knowledge, real knowledge, is only of God? Why is that true? Because what is knowledge? Knowledge is, when I understand, let's say I want to understand about the table. I want to understand something about the table. So, I want to know. Tell me about the table. So what did you say? I see it as a physical form. So you have to tell me, well, you know why it's here? You see, what's the cause of its existence? The cause of its existence is a carpenter. And why did he make it? He made it because people use it. There's a use for it. You see? Any knowledge that man has is based upon causality. Why is a person ill? What does it mean? What is the question mean? You want to have knowledge about illness. You want to know what is the cause of the illness. How does the cause operate? You see? Now, when you go back in causes, you come to one cause, which is? That's right. The first cause. The philosophers call the first cause. The first cause. Which is God. which means that in order to understand ultimately, ultimate knowledge must always be in God. Has to be. Because you're always missing the cause. As you keep on going, I want to have knowledge about the table. Okay, what's the cause of the table? The top. Now, what's the cause of the top? I keep on moving and moving until I find the ultimate cause. Now, once I get to God, there's no cause beyond that. Now, if I understand God, then I can see exactly how I can see the whole reality. If I don't understand God, so then I don't understand, I have no knowledge, because all knowledge is based upon the ultimate cause.
Nobody has total knowledge of anything.
Right. Must have God. Okay. Absolutely right. That's why metaphysics is the highest form of knowledge. That's what I'm always said. Metaphysics is the highest form of knowledge. And that's why philosophers always express their theories, always express their relation to God. Because if you want to really understand the universe, you have to understand God. Now, the reality of God is the cause of every existence, of everything in the universe, is due to his nature. So if I understand God, then I understand the whole universe. So when it says that they have knowledge, it must mean God, because ultimate knowledge is always God. See? So the enjoyment is the pure enjoyment of the knowledge of reality. And the knowledge of reality is the knowledge of God. It has to be that way. Okay. Now listen like this. He says, "Nikim Muslim Ruha Berius Bar," and this is God. Now this is a proposition that the Rambam doesn't explain too well over here. He says, "Vayoshu Rotzaloma Hamuskal," the knowledge that he perceives, "Vuhu," and he himself, "Dover Echad," they become one. This is a famous proposition of the Rambam. It's called Achdus Hamaskil Hamuskal, the oneness of the one who perceives and the object perceives. Perceived. What does the Rambam mean? Just as the philosophers explained it. Too lengthy to explain right over here at this point. Ram didn't want to go into this point. I'll go and explain away every difficulty. Try to give you a basic idea of what this proposition is. If I see a chair, correct? So there's two things. There's the sight, I see something. And then there's the chair. The object perceived and the perceiver. They're two different things. Right? The one acts on the other. But they are two separate things. The person builds the table, so there is the person. There's three things. There is the person, there's the act that he's involved in, building the table, and then there is the table that he builds. Three things. Correct? Okay. Now, the Rambam says it like this. Says this is true in regard to everything except intelligence. Intelligence doesn't work that way. Intelligence is different. When you say the intellect, you cannot speak of the intellect and the idea perceived. Because the intellect, or the action of the intellect, and the idea perceived. In other words, you cannot say like this. There is the intellect, there is the action of the intellect, and then there is the idea perceived by the intellect. You cannot say that. They are all one. Why are they one? Because the intellect means by definition knowledge. Intellect by definition means knowledge. And knowledge without ideas is nothing. So it's impossible to say that there is the intellect and then there is the knowledge as separate. Because that would mean that the intellect exists without knowledge, but the intellect itself is knowledge. You follow me? Similarly, you cannot say there is the intellect and there's the action of the intellect. Because the action of the intellect means the perception of knowledge. And without that action, it's not intellect. You understand what I mean? It's a very abstract. The Rambam doesn't explain it. He says it's extremely abstract. I'm going to try to break it down as much as I can.
The last one you made about the action of the intellect?
There's the intellect, then there's the action of the intellect. Right? They're not two. The process. You don't want to say process. You don't want to actually say process.
Isn't that a thought process?
Oh, 1 second. Right. But when we say intellect, what we mean is knowledge. We mean the perception of knowledge, right? That's what we mean by intellect. We don't mean intellect, the brain. We don't mean brain. When we say intellect, we don't mean the brain. We mean the intellect, we mean knowledge. When we say that a Malach is an intelligence, what does it mean he's an intelligence? It means that his nature is that he perceives. He has knowledge, you see? Now, in order to have knowledge, his intellect must be active. If it's not active, then there's no knowledge. In order to have knowledge, there must be ideas. If there are no ideas, there's no knowledge. So the Rambam says that when it comes to the intellect, there's the achdus hamaskil ramaskol. It's all one. There aren't three parts, but it's all one. The Rambam mentions in one of them why, because his people asked the question. They said, how could the Torah say God is one? Don't you believe God is intelligent? Yes, he's intelligent, right? Okay, so then there's three things. There's God, there's his intelligence, right? There's the abdin, there's the action of, and there's the action of that he's involved in when he's actually thinking, right? When he's actually thinking. And then there are the ideas he pursues, right? So the Rambam says, no, it's wrong. It's wrong. Why? Because the moment they say God is an intellect, I mean that he is in a state of, he's always in a state of thought. Inherently, his nature is that he's always in a state of thought. It's not that there's, that God exists without thought. Now he says, okay, I'm going to think. You see? If I say God is an intellect, it means his essence is intellectual. If his essence is intellectual, it means he's always thinking. Which means intellect, by definition, means action. Involves action, and it involves ideas. So that God, his ideas, and his action is all one. Because people ask, how is it possible? There's God, and then there's ideas. So there's two things. I can say that there's God, and there's the ideas, just separately. So there's two things. The Rambam says that's wrong. That does not operate in this case. That operates in every other case, but not in this one. Because by definition, intellect means ideas. And once intellect means ideas, you can't separate the ideas from the intellect. The intellect and ideas become one entity. Because what's the essence of intellect? The essence of intellect is ideas, right? So if that's the essence, so it has to, then it's one. Not this way. You don't understand it?
Does that mean that every idea is part of God?
Doesn't mean every idea is part of God. You know, all his ideas. Not our ideas, his ideas.
No, pure ideas.
Yeah, all his ideas, right? Pure ideas. Right. That means that you cannot, you see, but I want you to understand something. When you say that they are part of God, it doesn't mean in a physical sense, because the difficulty in this area is that you always start correlating it to the physical world. You always start bringing it and you start bringing it out of the physical world, but you can't because it's an abstract concept. There's nothing really for the world. It's a totally different area. The only thing we can say is this. The Rambam tries to just give the mashal, because he says beyond the mashal is extremely abstract, and you have to make that layer to climb up out of yourself. It just gives you the first step. See, the first step on the ladder is simply, if you think about it in terms of man, human intellect, you'll find that you cannot say there's intellect without ideas, because intellect without ideas is not intellect. By intellect, you mean of necessity ideas. So the ideas and intellect are one, they're not separate things. The intellect without an idea is not intellect. The essence of intellect is ideas. You follow? You understand? Once you have the essence of the thing, let's say you have the essence of the table. So once you have that essence, so that's what it is. I mean, you can't, there's the essence and then there's accidents. Accidents mean, what is an essence of an accident? You know what? Intellect, you mean something which has knowledge, right? Something which operates and is knowledgeable, right? Now, if I take away the ideas, I don't have that something anymore. Because what's the essence of what I'm talking about? I'm talking about something which has knowledge, right? Now, since I'm talking about, and since that's the essence, if I take away the knowledge, I don't have it anymore. Right? So you can't say it's separate. I could say the color of the table is separate from the table. I can't say, can I say the form of the table is separate from the table? No, because that is the table. See, you can say the color is separate. It's a separate thing. The color is separate from the table. Why can't I say it's separate? Take away the color of the table, still here. So it's obviously something separate.
Just the physical property.
Yeah, just the property that was added to the table. Right? Okay, I could say the books on top of the table. It's a physical property. It happens to be, it's in certain conditions, the books are on top of it. But it's not there. Right. But if I take away the form of the table, then I can't, how can I say the form of the table and the table is two things? When you take away the form, there's no table. You understand? Right? It makes sense. Simple. Okay? Simple. By definition means knowledge. That which has knowledge. That which perceives knowledge. If you take away the ideas, there's no intellect anymore. So how can you say that the ideas and the intellect are two different things? The ideas and the intellect aren't necessarily one. Because the moment you remove the ideas, there's no intellect anymore. Do you understand what I mean?
There's no intellect whatsoever?
No, that's not intellect.
You can't get different ideas?
But when we say intellect, we mean that which perceives ideas. The moment you remove the ideas, it's not an intellect anymore. It's just it's a chemical, it's a brain.
There's a newborn baby, right?
A newborn baby has no intellect. No, he has no intellect. Absolutely not. Do you understand it? The potential for intellect. That which could become intellect. But he's not, he doesn't have intellect now. Would you say a one-year-old child has intellect? There's no intellect. It's a one-month-old baby. Intellect is right. Intellect is knowledge, right? Old baby. To a person who is thinking, it's not two different things. It's one thing. The intellect and the ideas are one. If you take away the ideas, you have no intellect anymore. You understand
what I mean? What is it really trying to say here, then?
This is the first part that he says. Achdus hamaskil v'hamaskol. That with the intellect, the ideas...
This tape is completely revved out to the end.
That da 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 da